Welcome to Podskiwili. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Graham.
Okay, so we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to do some fun stuff talking about Ticats quarterbacks. It's free agency's in the rearview mirror. We're now about 2 months away from the opening of training camp. It's going to be here quicker than you said. I'm sitting here in Hamilton right now. It's like 20 degrees outside. It feels like training camp weather. There's a little crisp breeze in the air. I know, Mike, where you are right now, not exactly the same type of weather, but it's feeling like the start of the season already. So I figured we could talk, kind of do from here until maybe the start of camp, kind of look at these positions, kind of where the team is at these spots and how they kind of compare to their division mates. We're also going to talk about some Ticats signings, but before we get to all that, the ugliness that I just feel like we should get it out of the way first, the Chad Kelly lawsuit that's been hanging over the CFL like an albatross. I'm not even sure if that's the right turn of phrase, but you and I have both spoken about this individually. You did it on your Patreon show. I did it on Patreon, but I also put it out as a solo podcast. I think I did mine about a day after the allegations, the lawsuit came out. I guess I had a lot to get off my chest about it because I find this stuff kind of disturbing, quite honestly. Like, I feel that if you don't know the backstory, Chad Kelly and the Toronto Argonauts are being sued essentially for wrongful dismissal and for harassment in the workplace. Essentially, the Argos, there was a strength and conditioning coach that allegedly Chad Kelly harassed to try to date, made some comments to her, yelled at her, threatened her. There was some other members of the Argos front office, namely John Murphy, who said something to the effects of, this is according to the lawsuit, you've opened a can of worms that shouldn't be opened. This coach was later, did not have her contract renewed in January after she had brought this up to the team and the kind of the office there. This was never given to the CFL. We didn't find out about this until Rick Westhead put out his investigative report. Since then, Kelly has responded to the lawsuit. He put out a tweet that said, I am shocked by the allegations which have been made against me. I absolutely deny these events and intend to vigorously defend myself and will be seeking the dismissal of the action. He has since deleted that tweet. He got a lot of publicity from it and then hours later got rid of it. I'm not surprised that he would make a statement like this. It seems a little forward, quite frankly, especially if these things turn out to be true, as I believe they are. The CFL then came out and said that they will be doing an independent investigation into these actions. That's kind of where we stand right now, Mike. I got thoughts on this, but I'd like you to talk first because I just kind of want to gather those thoughts before. This has made me angry. How about you?
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's in this day and age that, you know, women shouldn't have to deal with that at the workplace. You know what I mean? And it just shows that if all this is true, that Chad Kelly is a stupid person and a bad person, and he shouldn't be allowed to play in this league anymore. It's as simple as that. He, just to me, like, the accusations of him yelling and screaming at her in front of all these people just shows that he thinks he can get away with anything. And he's probably thought that his whole life. He's had a checkered past getting back to college and even before that, I believe, where he's had, you know, some troubling incidences. So I believe that people can change in life. I think that people can improve themselves and change their ways. But I also believe that some people can't. And I believe that Chad Kelly is one of those people that hasn't changed their ways, even with given, he has the talent and all that to play in the NFL. I believe he threw it away. He got a second opportunity to play in the CFL. He got a big contract, almost $2 million. And it looks like he's thrown that away as well. So just an unfortunate, you know, incidences. And I hope that he's dealt with appropriately.
Yeah, I'm all for second chances. I'm all for people. Look, none of us are perfect. If you go into my past, your past, anyone's past, we've said and done things that as we grow, we later regret that we did and realize that those things were childish and stupid. And if you look at yourself 20 years in the past and think that you're the same person, then you haven't grown as a human being. And I just, that to me is unfathomable. But he's had second and third. Like, this is not his second chance. Like, there were incidences in college. There were incidences when he was a professional. And now there's incidences now that he's in Canada. Like, this is a continuing pattern. Now, it's different things. Like, he got drunk and went into someone else's house when he was a member of the Denver Broncos. He stormed the field at his when he was injured at his brother's high school game because he was angry about hits on his – like, there was threats that he was going to quit Clemson because he wasn't given the start. Like, there seems to be a pattern of, like – he expects things to be handed to him, essentially. And I'm not saying he doesn't work for what he's got, but at the same time, he expects that he's Teflon and nothing can touch him. And this is just another instance of that, where he thinks, because he's the big money quarterback, he's the superstar, that he can get away with these things. And in this day and age, that's unacceptable. The fact that this took as long as it did, after the initial report comes out, and we waited over a week for anyone, the league, the Argos, Kelly himself, to make an official statement. And I know people have been throwing in my face for the past few weeks, well, the media got these quotes and put them in a piece. I don't give a flying fuck what Three Down or Farhan or Naylor or any of those people got. That's not, if this was any, this is something the league needed to get ahead of. If they want to send out that message to the press, that's fine. You also need to send it out yourself, because there are people, believe it or not, who don't listen to those, who don't follow those people on social media, who don't read Three Down. Like, do you think Three Down has the entire CFL fandom reading their site? They don't. They absolutely do not. Not everyone follows Farhan Lalji on Twitter or Dave Naylor on Twitter or Jeff Hamilton. Like, those things, you need to put out your own statement. And then the league did that, and it was meh, whatever. And they buried it on their own website. Like, it wasn't the headline piece, which it should have been. It was something they buried on their own website. So I was giving the league a little bit of a pass. It's not like they could get ahead of this because they didn't know it was coming, because as the lawsuit stated, the Argos never informed the league that this happened. Now, that to me speaks very poorly of the Toronto Argonauts. And there's one person who seems to be getting no sort of bad publicity from this, and that's Pinball Clemens. What did Pinball? I need to know what Pinball knew, and I need to know when he knew it, because he gets by on this nice guy reputation. And is he brought John Murphy back into the organization after John Murphy was caught on tape using homophobic language. Actually, it's not even homophobic language, because I don't like the term homophobia, because that comes off as like, phobia is a fear of, you're not scared of gay people, you're not scared of trans people, you think they're subhuman and you don't think they should exist. You're a piece of shit as far as I'm concerned. But he used that type of language. He got into a physical altercation. He was quote unquote fired for a year and then brought back under the cloak of darkness that nobody, how come no one in the last year and a bit went to Pinball Clemens and said, why did you bring this guy back after what he did? And is it a case of, because it's a simple second chances? Okay, fine, whatever. But Pinball skated on this. The league has skated on this. The Argos have skated on this. And the response that I've seen from people who are fans of the Argos, who are willing to twist themselves into Gordian knots to back this guy, I have found, frankly, rather disturbing. I just think that we got to stop putting these talented individuals who entertain us on these goddamn pedestals. Like, I get it. We just got off spending weeks lionizing Simone Lawrence, and I get it. But at the same time, do we really know how good of a person he is? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not trying to impugn Simone. I love him, but you know what I mean? Like, we put these people on pedestals, and then, you know, we buy their jerseys and we wear their names on our backs. And then when they falter because they're human, and sometimes they do really shitty things like OJ Simpson, or they do, you know, minor shitty things like, I can't even think of some, you know, Josh Gordon, for instance. You know what I mean? Like, and because we've tied our identities to these people, are we afraid to admit we made a mistake in backing this person? Like, I don't understand why these fans continue to rally around this guy, and why they're so willing to give him the benefit of the doubt when it's not the accused that we should be backing here. It's the accuser. Like, this is a woman who, when we think of why these cases don't go, like, they go unreported, which happens more often than you would think. Ask any woman you know if they've dealt with any sort of physical, sexual, or harassment in any way. I guarantee you 100% of them will have a story, if not multiple stories, of dealing with something to this effect. I just don't understand why. I don't even know. Like, this gets me so flustered that I can't form coherent sentences. You know what I mean? Like, I just get, it's so unacceptable. And for the league to then come out with, we're going to investigate this. Is this just going to be another case where they sweep something under the rug, Mike? Like, is that where this is, that where this is headed? Because I think that they didn't put out any sort of press release because they wanted us to fume over it for a day, forget it over the weekend, and then let it go. And that's essentially what they did by it's just so infuriating that something that I love so much, which is the Canadian Football League, and applauding, they have a violence against women in the workplace policy. And they haven't followed it. And I get that they didn't. And again, like I said, I gave them kind of the benefit of the doubt, or at least some leeway at first, because they didn't know that this was happening because the Argos didn't report it. But now that they know, they've kind of contravened everything. Like, in that policy, they say we won't act as criminal investigators or fact finders. That's exactly what they're doing right now. When we find out about this stuff in the workplace, we will act. They didn't. They sat on their ass. They say they will always err on the side of the safety and the respect of the inherent rights of security from harm for the people. They didn't do that in this case. This is a direct quote. In the face of a report of violence against women perpetrated by a CFL employee, we will always take it seriously. Doing nothing will never be an option. They've done fucking nothing. You know what I mean? Like, every single point that they trumpeted back when Jeffrey Orrig put this out, they failed to meet. And that's very disappointing from someone sitting here thinking about, like, someone who supports this league with my eyeballs, with my money, and have for years. It's just, it makes me sick. It's the same way I felt in the NFL when Deshaun Watson got all his allegations, and then the Cleveland Browns. Like, if I was a Cleveland Browns fan, like, how do I feel about them handing a $250 million fully guaranteed contract to a guy? Like, it's just, have we not grown a society where we just, it's just simply, man, throw ball well, we cheer, who cares? Like, are we still there? Like, how have we not gotten past that?
Absolutely, we're still there, Josh. I mean, it's worse now. I mean, you see Kanye West fans defending a guy and, like, ignoring that he's like, I love Hitler, like, all that crazy shit. Just push it all aside because it doesn't matter to these fucking freaks, okay? They have an obsession with celebrities, an obsession. They wake up in the morning, they go to Twitter, they defend Kanye, they defend whoever the person is that they're obsessed about. They stay on Twitter all day talking about that one person. People are obsessed with celebrities. That's just the way it is. My question is the CFL not doing as much because they're worried that they're going to kill the momentum of the Argonauts? Because last year, you might say that, hey, man, there's like more people showing up to the games, all that kind of stuff. Chad Kelly's kind of a star. You know, obviously, they're not packing the stadium, but we did see some growth in that area. So I think it has a lot to do with, hey, let's try to be quiet because we want the Argonauts to be popular again. That's what I think.
And with the fans,
like, I saw a guy telling on himself on Twitter. Telling on himself, hey, I used to be a manager at a bar, and I got fired because I was sexually harassing my workers, and that wasn't true. But, like, you put that out there, man, and, like, who are you? Like, that's your word. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you say. Why would we believe you?
People always like to say, oh, they're lying. Oh, they're looking for money. Oh, they're doing this. It's like, do you realize how few of these actually get reported, and then how few of them actually turn out to be false? Like, they're it's always like, oh, Duke lacrosse, or they always have their Johnny Depp, their go-tos, right? Like, it's always here are the five examples in recorded history of these things. And it's like, yeah, but do you know how many of these things actually occur? And oh, I remember the point I was trying to make. When we talk about these things, the reason these go unreported or underreported is the fear of reprisal. And that's exactly what happened in this situation. Like, this happened. She brushed it off. Then it got too much. She confronted Kelly about it. That got out of hand. She went to her bosses. They did nothing. And then she lost her job. This is why people don't say anything. And that's what I find to be the most disturbing and disgusting about this, is we have a textbook example of why these things go underreported. And these fucking knuckle dragon motherfuckers are like, no, I think he's innocent. No, she's making it up. Like, are you out of your fucking, like, oh, it's just, it's so endlessly anger inducing that these people will simply just do whatever, like, because he entertains them and makes their football team a winner, they don't care. And it's just, we have to be better than this. We have to be. And I understand the cynic. I'm just as cynical as you about this stuff, buddy. And I do think the same thing. It's like, is this the league going, oh, if it's no Chad Kelly and they got to go with some other, like, could the Argos suffer? And if the Argos suffer, but the league might suffer, because there's people out there that might, like, we always make fun of, there's always going to be an excuse for fans not to, or non-fans to not tune in. There's always going to be a reason. But if someone came up to me and said, the reason I'm refusing to watch the Canadian Football League this year is the way they handled the Chad Kelly situation, how can I argue that? It's no different than if someone came up to me and said, I'm not watching the NFL because of Deshaun Watson stuff. Or, you know what I mean? Like, or I'm not watching the NHL because of what happened with the Chicago Blackhawks. Like, how can I argue against what, like, I had a, I'm like, look, we're, I'm going to watch the CFL. I'm going to follow the Ticats. But this Argos thing, it's gotten to the point where it's like, man, like, how do you defend this now? You can't possibly defend this. And if someone comes up to you and says, and maybe it's bullshit and maybe it's just an excuse and whatever. And again, like you, I could be cynical about the stuff as well. But if you met someone and they just said, well, I saw what happened with the Chad Kelly stuff and I don't want to support that anymore. How do you say, well, you're wrong? You can't. You simply can't.
You can't. You could point to any league and make excuses.
Of course.
Because there's terrible shit in every league. But, yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes you think, oh, man, like, you know, I used to think, oh, you know, Canada's better. Canada's better than these countries and all the stuff like that. I used to think, you know, the CFL is better because they care about, you know, their employees or sexual assault or diversity and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, deep down, none of these people, none of these corporations, none of these leagues give a shit. They just want to make more money. And that's the fact of life. And that's the fact of business.
And that's fine if that's what they came out and said. You know what I mean? Like, because then at least you could make a, an informed decision. If the CFL came out and said, you know what, quite frankly, Chad Kelly's too good for business, so we're going to let this slide. At least then you'd be like, well, you're being honest, go fuck yourself, but you're being honest. You know what I mean? Versus this, like, we're going to try to do something and we're going to, because it's selective. Do you remember Nate Holly? The Argos tried to sign him. I think it was 2021. He was a free agent. He tried out for the NFL. The Argos tried to sign him and there wasn't a lawsuit. There were social media posts by women claiming that Nate Holly was sexually manipulative and emotionally abusive. And because of social media posts from a number of women, the CFL came out and said, we won't sign a contract. And this is a direct quote. I just looked up the piece and they said, why? Because they will not register a contract in accordance with our violence against women policy. Now, Nate Holly had been previously charged with felony kidnapping and assault. That led to his dismissal from Kent State. He was found not guilty on those charges, but the school got rid of him and there was no backlash there. Nate Holly, who's not a superstar quarterback, but was with the Argos, is still not allowed to play in the Canadian Football League. As far as I know, he is still barred from playing in this league because of social media posts. This is a lawsuit. People think that this isn't the US where people file frivolous lawsuits because their McDonald's coffee was too hot and it burned them on their lap.
Whoa. That's actually okay. I actually watched a documentary on that, and it was an old lady that happened to, and it really fucking burned her.
But you know what I mean?
It's beyond, it doesn't even matter, but I was just trying to be.
No, funny. I understand, but you know what I mean? Like, that's the, you know, they put on detergent, do not ingest, because someone once swallowed Tide detergent and then tried to sue. You know what I mean? Like, there are these frivolous lawsuits that go on in the U.S. That doesn't really happen in Canada. So for this to get to the courts tells me that there's some validity to it, because you wouldn't go and do this, put yourself out there. I just feel as if the league is being very selective. Like, my response to this would have been, John Murphy and Chad Kelly, who were both named in the suit, were indefinitely suspended pending an investigation. And then you let this all play out, and then based on the results, you decide what's next. But I don't understand, like, how these guys have not remained employed, but remained in their positions, because the legal system is a slow moving beast. Are we going to get to May with this thing unresolved and Kelly's going to be on the field? Because to me, he should not be allowed to step foot on another Canadian Football League field until this thing is figured out, and figured out in either the positive or the negative for him. If it's proven that he's wrongfully being accused of this, then it is what it is. But if these prove to be true, he should never play in the Canadian Football League again. I don't understand. I don't see why that statement is controversial. And I don't see why right now they shouldn't get him away from the team and not allow, same with John Murphy, you're indefinitely suspended pending this investigation. I don't understand why that's so hard.
How do you think this ends? Like, say it is all true, which we both believe it to be. Is he gone from the CFL? Is there like a half year suspension? What happens?
Yeah, I think I think you and I thinking he should be gone is wishful thinking. I think he'll get a 6-game suspension. They'll probably reduce it to 3 on appeal, and he'll be back on the field. And by September, by Labor Day, most people will have stopped caring. And that's the part that bothers me the most, because I personally think that if this is true, and I do, like, I will say until I'm blue in the face, I do believe these accusations. I don't think he should ever step foot on the field again, but I think that I'm being overly optimistic in that regard. I think he'll end up playing again. And it's, to me, it's just a black mark on the league if that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. I think that it will be some kind of multi-game suspension and nothing
more. Because honestly, Mike, what I think is going to happen is this is not going to get to court. There's going to be a settlement. Right. And they'll use that settlement, and there'll probably be some non-disclosure agreements or whatever, and they'll use that as a way to be like, well, nothing was proven in public, and there will be some type of escape hatch here for everyone involved. And that's what'll save, because if this comes out, if this goes to court and he loses based on previous incident, there is no way the league should allow him to continue playing. You know what I mean? Cause, like, look at Johnny Manziel, for instance. And there's been a ton of comparisons between Chad Kelly and Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel came to Hamilton, and at that time I was willing to give him a second chance. I really was. I wasn't happy about it, but I was like, you know what? Everyone deserves a chance to show that they've grown. And then he didn't. And there were issues with him in the Tiger Cats locker room. And then he went to Montreal, and there were clauses in his contract that he refused to fulfill. And now he's not allowed to play up here. Now, that was 5 years ago, but I don't see why this should be any different, but it will be, because I'm naturally cynical. I don't believe the league will do the right thing. I think they'll find a way to get out of this. And I think what'll happen is a settlement will be the reason for it. Now, maybe John Murphy gets fired, and maybe John Murphy gets barred from the league. That'll be the sort of, here's the head on the pike to, you know, appease the masses. But I do believe Chad Kelly will be on the field for the Argos this year, as much as it disgusts me.
Yeah, I believe so as well. And I don't know if that's going to help or hurt the Toronto Argonauts, because he's good on the field, but the press can't be good for the team. So I suspect some kind of multi-game suspension. And, you know, like we saw in the NFL with Deshaun Watson, it doesn't matter. Like this is one accuser. He had like 40 or you know, multiple.
Yeah, it was 20. It was 20 to 30. Yeah, it was a lot more.
So yeah, I think I could see like maybe probably the biggest suspension in league history, perhaps. But that unfortunately is not enough. And yeah, I think he'll be on the field next season.
All right, let's talk about something fun. I know there's no easy way to transition into something serious, into something fun, but let's try to have a little fun. That's what we like to do. But unfortunately, sometimes the real world impedes on our ability to have fun. But these are important discussions that I think we should be talking about, and I'm glad we had a chance to do that today. Let's talk about quarterback. Let's talk about Ticats quarterbacks, Mike. We're going to do, as I said at the top of the show, we're going to do this kind of a positional breakdown of each positional group going into the start of training camp and kind of look at where the Ticats are and then kind of gauge where this group or where their starters or whatever have you, however you want to kind of phrase it, kind of stacks up to the rest of the division. We're going to start with quarterbacks today. Ticats currently have three quarterbacks under contract. Bo Levi Mitchell, who we all know restructured his contract earlier this year to stay with the team for two more years. Taylor Powell, who's back after a very promising season that saw him start eight games last year and was, in my opinion, probably yours too, Mike, the best quarterback on the Ticats roster last year.
Yeah, I'd have to say so for consistency and, he was
expectations
for a rookie quarterback. He came in and did a hell of a job.
Yeah, exactly. And then the third quarterback is newcomer Kevin Thompson. He was with the BC Lions in 2021. And from all reports, he was set to become the primary backup to Nathan Rourke in 2022. But he was injured in the preseason, and that led to his release. Since then, he played very little time with, I think it was the Birmingham Stallions of the USFL. And now he's back with the Ticats to try to resurrect his CFL career. Comes from the Big Sky Conference, which is known for producing some pretty darn good quarterbacks, Dave Dickinson amongst them. You went to Sacramento State, which is the same school that Ricky Ray once attended. Bo Levi Mitchell, also a Big Sky Conference guy. So there's been some pretty talented quarterbacks come out of that and succeed in the CFL. So those are the three guys they have now. I'm sure by the time we get to camp, there'll probably be another player added. Do you think that they need to add a third quarterback, or looking at these three here, are you happy with what they have if this is the three that they go into the season with?
I'll be pretty happy with what they have if they go into the season this way. I think that they should add an arm for training camp just to add an arm. But, Bo Levi Mitchell, veteran, we'll get into it a little bit, but I'm pretty happy with these three guys. You know, looking at the younger guys, Kevin Thompson has a ton of potential. There are a lot of people who were high on him. And we saw what Taylor Powell can do. So the guys behind Bo Levi Mitchell right now, I'm pretty happy with. Young and promising.
Is this a fairly static 1-2-3 for you? Like, is it Bo's the starter, Powell's the backup, Thompson's number three? Or do you think that there might be a battle for the one spot or maybe a battle for the two spot? What do you think?
I think Bo's going to be entrenched as that number one spot to begin the season. You know, going into training camp, he's going to have the confidence of being the starting quarterback, I believe. But I do believe that, Thompson and Taylor Powell will battle it out for that second position. Ultimately, I think Powell will get it, but I think there will be a competition for the backup.
Yeah, so the thing is I think Bo's going to get every opportunity to be the starter, and it's going to come through training camp and the preseason. And having been at Ticats training camp last year, pretty much every day, Bo looked great in camp. Like, it wasn't a case of watching it and being like, you know, rose colored glasses. Like he had his arm strength. He had his accuracy. Like, he looked really good in camp last year. And the little we saw of him in the preseason, he looked really good. I think he went something like 4 for 6 for 60 yards and a touchdown and nearly threw like a 70 yard bomb on the first play of the game in the preseason game, but Justin McGriff dropped it. So it's like Bo in when he's the healthiest, when maybe it's not as competitive as it is during the regular season, looks great. So to start the season, he's absolutely going to be the starting quarterback, barring an injury. You know what I mean? And I think fans that want there to be sort of a Bo Powell quarterbacking competition, I think you're going to be disappointed because I just don't think we're going to get that. I do think that there can be a competition for number two, though, because I do think that Kevin Thompson's resume, like, he was a finalist for the Walter Payton Award, which is like the Heisman Trophy for FCS schools. He ended up losing that award to Trey Lance, who was the third overall pick in the NFL draft a couple years later. He put up some great numbers when he was at Sacramento State. I think it was something like 27 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions. And it's like he's got that collegiate pedigree, and seeing as how high they were on, like, he was going to be the backup to Nathan. Like, imagine if he didn't get hurt. And in 2022, when Nathan Rourke goes down, is Kevin Thompson, like, do they make the trade to go get Vernon Adams, or are they confident that Kevin Thompson, like, we'll never know. It's a sliding door situation, but I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised with Kevin Thompson. Talking to people connected kind of with the Lions that know that team, kind of like we know the Ticats, say that he was legitimately their second best quarterback in 2022 before he got hurt. So I think that there's a better chance that it goes Mitchell, Thompson, Powell than it is that it goes Powell, Mitchell, Thompson. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there'll be a competition for that starting position. I think Bo is the guy as of right now. Now that can change as we go along in the season. If he sucks, then he's going to get pulled. But, you know, game one, he will be entrenched as the starter, I believe.
And where is game one?
In Calgary. So yes, it's a bit of a storybook, you know, after last year, not being able to go back to Calgary, first game of the season, we will see Bo Levi Mitchell play at, what the hell's the name of that? McMahon Stadium.
And potentially you and I are going to be there.
Potentially. Yes.
I'm thinking of making the trip and you're not that far. It's a Friday night game. Maybe we actually meet up. And hopefully together we can see a second straight Ticats victory at McMahon Stadium. As everyone remembers, in 2022, they finally broke the McMahon curse. And hopefully now this leads to a run. But yeah, I think Mitchell's going to be the starter that first week. I think it would take something catastrophic for him not to be. But like I said, I do think that there's a possibility that we could be seeing a battle for the backups. But it'll be interesting that first week of training camp. I'm hoping to get there a few days in May to see some stuff. Cause I like training camp. I know a lot of people aren't into football. Practice can be boring, but there's some training camp when you get to see some of these younger guys. It's kind of interesting. I will be keeping an eye on that. Cause Bo's going to get the majority of the first team reps, and then it'll be interesting to see between Thompson and Powell and any other potential quarterbacks they bring in who might get those secondary reps. It'll be pretty interesting to watch that when it unfolds in a couple of months. But where do you think the Ticats quarterback room right now ranks amongst the rest of the division? So the Argos will work on the assumption that Chad Kelly is going to be there because he's still on the roster. He's still signed. So I don't want to act as if he won't be there because we don't know yet. Like we talked earlier, we assume he's going to be there, maybe even on a suspension, but we'll keep Kelly there. They also have Brian Scott and Cameron Dukes. Dukes played a little bit last year and looked a lot better than I anticipated him to look. So that's it. If Kelly's gone, maybe they go with Dukes. Maybe they try to find someone else. Who knows? The defending champion Alouettes, obviously they bring back Cody Fajardo, Grey Cup MVP. They have Caleb Evans, Davis Alexander, and James Morgan as a newcomer. Evans and Alexander were both with the team last year. And then the Red Blacks have like 740 quarterbacks, but their biggest ones, the ones that everyone knows, they went out and traded for Drew Brown. They still have Dustin Crum. They still have Jeremiah Mazzoli, and Tyree Adams is still there. So you look at who the other teams have, and who the Ticats have, where do you kind of place the Ticats in the hierarchy of this division? Are they at the top? Are they at the bottom? What are you thinking? And then kind of where do you see these quarterback groups? Like if you want to rank them like 1 to 4, where do you put everybody? And then where do you got the Cats?
Well, I think the Cats are, you know, going into the season, I would probably not take the starter on the Cats, you know. Yeah, depending on Ottawa. Ottawa's a tough one because obviously you have Jeremiah Mazzoli coming back, but there's a big question mark with him. The new guy coming in, Drew Brown. Listen, I think they would probably be second on the pecking order because I believe that with all three of those guys, they stand up pretty well, you know, with the veteran Bo Levi Mitchell, depending on how he's going to play. Like, we don't know how he's going to perform coming into the season, but I feel comfortable with the guys behind him more so than the backups with those other teams. You mentioned Toronto, the guy there showed some good things last year. You know, Ottawa's, they have some pretty good backups. I guess Dustin Crum showed some things. Mazzoli is obviously a veteran that's going to be there. And then Drew Brown, I assume, is going to be their starter. But you know, if I was going to, you know, line them all up, I would put the Tiger Cats at probably 2 on that pecking order, just because I'm not sure how well Bo Levi Mitchell is going to play.
All right, you're a little higher on them than even I am. I got him 3rd. Again, working on the assumption that Chad Kelly's going to play, to me it's the Argos, the Owls, the Ticats, and the Red Blacks. I've fallen for the Red Blacks thing now for 2 years. The last 2 years I thought Ottawa was going to be good, and they've been 4-14 both years. This team hasn't been good in a half a decade. And I am not as – how many times have we seen the hot newcoming quarterback that gets traded to a new team, oh, he's going to light the world on fire, fall flat in his goddamn face. Like, yeah, Zach Collaros worked in Hamilton when he came over from Toronto. But what's Drew Brown going to look like when he doesn't have all the advantages built in that Winnipeg has? Winnipeg has a great defense. Winnipeg has a great head coach. Winnipeg has great skill position players and a great offensive line and a great running game. Does Ottawa have any of that? Their defense is good. Their coaching staff is not. They haven't, again, maybe they will be, but they haven't proven they can be. The receivers are decent. Like, I think they're better this year. Dominique Rimes. Who else do they have? Justin Hardy. Jalen Acklin. Like, it's a decent group of receivers. Braylon Addison's still there. I'm not ready to crown any. I did the same thing with Chad Kelly last year. I said, look, you guys can talk about how great he is going to be, but I need to see it before I'm willing to put a stamp on it. And then he showed it, so I put a stamp on it. To me, though, he's the reigning MOP. If he's there, he makes the rest of the team, the rest of that quarterback, like he elevates the rest of that quarterback room just by being there because of how good he was last year. And then how do you not put the Owls at number two? Like for you, is it Owls one, Ticats two, Argos yeah. three, Red Blacks four?
I think so. I think the Alouettes, you know, Fajardo is, you know, he won a great cup last year.
Do you still have, can I ask you something? Do you still have questions about him despite how good he was in the playoffs?
I do. And I don't know if people think that's crazy and that's fine, but he played well. He played very well in the Grey Cup game. I'm not sure how well he played in the playoff game against Toronto. I mean, Chad Kelly was fucking horrible. And yeah.
That was more Chad Kelly being abysmal than it was the Alouettes, really. Because if I recall, the Alouettes offense didn't do a ton in that game until the defense started breaking it open and was picking off every pass that Kelly threw.
Yeah, exactly. So I still do have question marks. Cody Bajardo has to prove it again this year. And I know that might sound ridiculous to some people after winning a championship, but, you know, he won a championship. Now let's see if he can continue that success. So,
well, because here's the thing. Is Cody Fajardo the next Danny McManus bouncing around from team to team, finally gets an opportunity and makes good on it? Or is he the next Marcus Crandall, where he has one semi-decent playoff run, gets a championship out of it, and then you never hear from him? You know what I mean? Like, it's not as if the CFL is devoid of one-and-done quarterbacks. You know what I mean? Like, there are guys who have won championships who have then not panned out into much of anything. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm in the same boat as you, man. I still have some questions about him, but I'm willing to give them, and him in particular, the benefit of the doubt because they won last year. So I'm still tentative on him, but I'm not as, like, if this was at this time last year, I might have had the Ticats first because I wasn't a believer in Kelly at the time. I wouldn't have believed it. It might have been, and this might sound silly, I might have gone Hamilton, Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, which is completely ludicrous given what we saw last year. But that's how I would have probably had them last year going. I would have believed more in Mazzoli. Oh, he's going to come back. He's going to get back on track. He's going to be great. Bo's healthy for the first time. He's in a new offense. He's rejuvenated. He's going to be great. And ended up going the other way. So, I mean, that's the fun part about this time of year is that we think we know what we know, and then we don't really know what we don't know. With the backups, though, I think that if you're counting Drew Brown as the starter and you're going Crum Mazzoli as kind of QB2 in Ottawa, I think I'm higher on Hamilton's backups than I am anyone else's. Like, I don't think Caleb Evans is that good. Davis Alexander, I don't think we've seen enough of. And for all the publicity that Dustin Crum got, he was great the first 2 weeks, and then that team fell off a cliff. Yeah. And then Mazzoli, it's just like, can he stay on the field? And I think I might have Hamilton's backups, like Powell in particular. Like, I might have elevated them to the top spot. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's why I have pinned them.
You have them so high? Yeah, that's what you said.
High, it's because, yes, there's a question mark with Bo Levi Mitchell, but I think the backups are, you know, I have more confidence in them than I would in guys in Montreal or Toronto or Ottawa. Even in Ottawa with, you know, a veteran like Mazzoli, I just don't know what he's going to be after those two knee injuries, right? So, yeah, I think that's why I have them so high, is because I have confidence in Taylor Powell. And then, you know, not even seeing Kevin Thompson that much, but I just, the things that I'm hearing are indicative of a guy that could maybe in the future step up and be a starter.
Well, here's the thing. Cam Dukes, Caleb Evans, Dustin Crum, Taylor Powell. Caleb Evans probably has the most experience. Dustin Crum and Taylor Powell are about the same. And Dukes looked good, but it was is Dukes in a, you know, a Drew Brown situation where everything else in Toronto was great and he looked good when he came in. You know what? Like, I look at that and it's like, yeah, they all have kind of question marks. Like, I think we know what Caleb Evans is as a quarterback. Like, I think his ceiling has been reached. Very similar to like Matthew Schultz. Like, we know what he's good at. We know what he can do. There's not a lot of upside there. There is upside because we saw him a lot last year, but now how does he, that leap from year one to year two is always the most interesting one. Now he's probably not going to get a lot of chances to show that on the field, but that's kind of where guys may, like, especially American guys, they say it's always the second year where that's where you can tell if a guy's going to be up or he's going to be kind of down or stagnant. And then I look at Powell and it's like, he wasn't perfect last year by any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, you saw him grow. You saw him get better. There were peaks and valleys. Like, it wasn't a straight line upwards. But I think, and this was the crazy thing about last year, is that Dustin Crum was the East Rookie of the Year. And I thought Taylor Powell was better than Dustin Crum last year. Yeah. And I think, again, don't know enough about Dukes. And then Caleb Evans, like I said, I think he is what he is. If you were taking the starters out, the presumed starters out, I think Hamilton has the brightest future. Now, Drew Brown obviously is young, and that plays into it as well. So maybe you'd give Ottawa that little bit of upside, but I don't know. Like, if Bo can be the fourth best quarterback in football and Taylor Powell has that upside as a potential number one someday, I don't really see that with any other team right now. And then you bring in the Kevin Thompson factor and it's like, he's an unknown, but you look at all the third string quarterbacks for these teams and they're essentially unknowns. That's fine. But again, like I said, with what people have said about him, there's a lot of upside and a lot of excitement about what he could become in the Canadian Football League. Ticats don't have a bad quarterback. It all comes down to, though, Bo's health, right? Like, that's where this season lives or dies. If Bo's healthy and plays well, this team's going to win a lot of games. If Taylor Powell goes in there, they're not going to fall off. They're not going to be a 5-13 team, but they're probably capped at it about what they were last year.
If Bo can get back to playing like Bo Levi Mitchell, I think we would have the best QB room in the East.
If he's MOP Bo, then that's no question in my, like, but I don't know if he can get back to that. That's
big question.
Yeah, I don't need him to be that. Give me a guy who doesn't throw six interceptions in a game. Give me a guy who's not throwing more picks than touchdowns. Give me a guy who's not making poor, like, just give me steady. If he throws for 225 yards, two touchdowns and one interception every week, I think the Ticats will win 10, 11 games. You know what I mean? Like, but if he's throwing, you know, one touchdown, four picks and 190, like, then this team won't be able to win. You know, like, I don't need him to be MOP Bo. I just need him not to make a ton of mistakes. If he can play mistake-free football for the most part, I think the Ticats can win some games. And I think, like you, this might be the best quarterback room in the division.
Yeah, because they're basically bringing back everybody that was there from last year, right? It's basically the same offense with a couple additions, but they're banking on Bo getting back to being an all-star quarterback or a quarterback that looks, you know, like he can play, that isn't throwing multiple interceptions in a game. So they're banking a lot on him, and it's hopefully he will be that Bo that we've known in the past.
All right, so next time when we get together, we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to do it with the skill position players. We're going to talk running backs, and we're going to talk receivers. Lots of interesting things there. The thing with the offense when I was kind of prepping for this stuff, like you just mentioned, not a lot of changes on the offensive side of the ball, so there's not a lot of holes to fill. I think the defense will be a much more interesting conversation when we get to that, because on offense, it's like the quarterback's back, the running back's back, most of the receivers are back. Like, there's been some addition. Like, there's not a lot of, like, guessing as to who will go where. It's a lot of the offensive line, for instance. We know who their starting group's going to be if everyone's healthy. Like, but it's still interesting to kind of piece together what they have versus what the rest of the league have. So the next time we get together, we're going to continue the skill position. We're going to talk receivers and running backs. But before we go, you talked about new guys coming in. The Ticats did sign three players in the past week. Tight end Thaddeus Moss, linebacker Ray Wilborn, and defensive back Michael Jaquette. The biggest name amongst them is Thaddeus Moss. He is, of course, the son of Hall of Fame receiver Randy Moss, and played at LSU in college, where he was a member of that 2019 College Football Playoff National Championship team that featured an all-star team of NFL superstars. Joe Burrow played there, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Patrick Queen. You look at that roster and it's essentially an NFL team. But despite all that talent around him, Thaddeus Moss set the single season LSU record for catches and yards by a tight end. And he was the guy that caught the record tying and record breaking touchdown passes from Joe Burrow when he set the single season record for touchdown passes in the NCAA that year, which has later been broken. I think Bailey Zappi, of all people, broke it. He's listed as a tight end and he's talked about as a tight end. And he was announced as a tight end. That's not a position we see used in the CFL really at all. What does this intrigue you at all with Moss? Like, are you kind of wondering where he fits in this offense?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the typical CFL offense has five receivers, no tight end, right? So obviously he's a big body dude, 6'3", 250. If he's going to be on the, playing offense regularly, his blocking skills with that big body is kind of intriguing to me. And especially if he's playing out of that tight end position, right on the offensive line, he could do some good things blocking for Bo Levi Mitchell. We've seen Scott Milanovich bring in a lot of big body receivers, and this guy is no exception. So obviously with the name, Randy Moss's son, it brings some celebrity to the team, and I wonder if he'll ever get up for a game. But,
fingers crossed that I could run into Randy Moss at Tim Hortons Field. That would be an absolute pleasure.
That would be pretty cool. He's only 25 years old. Obviously has a lot of talent. So I'm very intrigued to see if he makes a team, and then if he makes a team, how they're going to use him, because that tight end talk is very interesting.
Well, like, he's similar in size to like Jake Burt and Nikola Kalinic, but the thing that those guys had that he doesn't is a Canadian passport. And that's the hard part about this, is that he's coming in at a position that, if it's used in the CFL, more of a, like, because it's tight end, fullback, kind of the same thing, it's usually done by a Canadian. And if the Ticats are going to roster a guy like Thaddeus Moss, well, who are you not putting on the roster? What American are you taking off? Like, it's intriguing because it's different. I just don't know. And, like, we're talking about it. I made a big deal. I talked about a signing and what it could mean. I think you talked about it on one of your shows. It's the last name. Like I said, Randy Moss comes to Tim Hortons Field for a game in the summer. I'll do everything in my power to try to find him and meet him and shake his hand, because he was one of the most electric receivers in the NFL and someone I immensely enjoyed watching. And it would make my brother jealous, because my brother's a huge Randy Moss fan. So taking a selfie with Randy Moss and sending it to him would probably piss him off a little bit. But I just don't know where he fits in this offense. Like, are the Ticats going to try something new? Like, he's going to have to play special. If he wants to make this team, he's not going to be a starting receiver. He's going to have to play special teams. I don't know if he can. He's a big dude, like you said. I listened to an interview. I went out for one of my walks, and I listened to an interview on the Ticats Audio Network with Scott Milanovich. And he was asked about Thaddeus Moss, and he called him a tight end. He said, like, oh, we use tight ends up here a lot, but it's usually a six offensive lineman. But that six offensive lineman is usually a Canadian. So if you're going to use it, it's a really interesting, I'm very curious how this could work out come training camp time, how they decide to use him. And if it's one of those things where, because you got to remember the roster ratio makes things tricky to try stuff like this, but maybe this is the new wrinkle. Scott Milanovich, all those years in the NFL, is like, this is the new wrinkle he's bringing to his offensive philosophy, is using a more inline tight end versus a bigger slot back. I guess we'll have to wait and see. He also mentioned they brought in other tight ends, and I'm guessing some of those giant receivers that we saw brought in earlier this year are going to, maybe this is a position the Ticats are going to try to revolutionize in the CFL this year, an American tight end. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I remember you mentioned Jake Burt, and I remember we were, thinking, how are they going to use this guy in the red zone and all this stuff? And then it just never panned out. Hopefully this isn't the case with Moss, but it will be difficult, like you said, to, basically create a position on the field. And they already signed a couple of Canadian fullbacks to the line. So, Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he makes a team, and if he makes a team, how are they going to utilize him?
Speaking of making the team, the other two guys I mentioned they signed, Ray Wilborn, Michael Jacquet. The thing I find intriguing about this, these are the first guys they've officially signed and announced they're signing since free agency. So, like, the team signed a boatload of linebackers and DBs coming into this. But now that we know kind of where the roster is at, where we see the holes, I looked at some of these guys, like, highlight videos. And Wilborn, in particular, like, he played linebacker, but he played safety in college at Ball State. And he's a big dude. I think he's like 6'4", 205 or something like that. That's a 6'4" is a big dude. Like, I think we kind of gloss over some of the size of these guys, but 6'4" is a massive human being. I do wonder if this is the guy. Is this a potential Simone replacement? Does he play in the middle and Jordan Williams plays in Simone's spot? Could he play, like, as an ex safety, a little smaller? Could he play Sam linebacker? And it's the same thing I think about Jacquet. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. He's played in the NFL, started games for Philadelphia and Jacksonville. Like, are these the, like, I've kind of penciled in Carthel Flowers Lloyd as the Sam linebacker, but do you look at these guys, you see their size, you see what they've kind of done at the collegiate level and in Jacquet's spot, a professional level, and kind of go, huh, could these guys, like, we know that there's going to be some unknown guys coming in and playing in the defense, on the offense. You look at these guys with how they profile out and wonder if maybe these are the guys that this team could see making plays for this team in this season at one of those spots. Cause I certainly do.
Yeah. With their background and their versatility on the field, I could definitely see them filling in at the linebacker position, because you know, normally when they sign guys like this, you know, a lot of the time and they're just camp bodies and we won't have to pay attention to them that much. But in this case, where there's holes in the roster that have to be filled, a couple of these guys could be making the team. A couple of these guys could be starting in that linebacker core. So I would keep my eye on both of these gentlemen. They both have experience in high ranks in the NCAA. Jacquet had some time in the NFL. So, you know, you might recognize a couple of these guys' names. Or maybe just one of them coming into the season in 2024.
Is that why we haven't really covered a lot of these types of signings in the offseason. We've kind of let that, I think you and I both talk about them on our Patreon shows more than we do here, because they don't, for lack of a better term, not sexy signings. But do you think it's because we're at the point where these guys could be potential starters, because we know that there's holes at their spots? Like I said earlier, that's why we're more intrigued to talk about these guys now, because we see the path for them to get into the starting lineup versus, like, oh, they've signed a couple of linebackers, but, like, oh, they still have, you know, Jameer Thurman and Simone Lawrence, and they're looking for a Sam, but we know that usually comes from, like, we didn't have that information going in. And now we know that there's really only one linebacking spot solidified and these guys can play those roles. Does that make sense? Because that's how I feel like now that we're past sort of the roster building phase, like free agency's in the rearview mirror, I'm now looking at the pieces, and I'm actually doing this for Patreon. I'm looking at the rosters and trying to piece together what would be a Ticats depth chart should the season start today. And I'm looking at these guys and going, oh yeah, Kyle Wilson's hurt. Like, this guy could fill here. And if Kyle Wilson's, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels as if because we're now entering that, like, second phase, third phase of the offseason, that these signings take on a little bit more meaning.
Yeah, it is definitely more intriguing when there's, you know, holes to be filled. Like last year we had Lawrence and Thurman and Chris Edwards, and we knew that those guys were going to be the starters. That's not the case this year. So these names are more intriguing because we might be seeing them starting on the field as opposed to, you know, maybe being in the backup role or special teams. These might be guys that are in full focus when the starting lineup is put into place.
All right. Well, it's been kind of since free agency, it's been a little bit of a light few weeks for the Ticats. So that's really all we've got to talk about today. So until next time, that was Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.